The program that you're about to hear was reproduced from radio station WMBR 88.1 FM on the subject of gentrification in Boston with host Brother R.A. and featured guest Alphonse Morad. For more information on this program, you can log on to http://members.aol.com/scandal637/corruption.html or email to Morad, spelled M-O-U-R-A-D, 200@hotmail.com.
Remember when there was a certain portion of Boston that wanted to secede from Boston proper? It wanted to become a city unto itself. Do you remember that had this happened, this city would have total autonomy? It would have its own city hall, its own rule of governance, its own ways and means of making money and generating itself. Now, I myself, working with others, had gone door to door asking black people to sign a petition for secession. And black folks were like, "Oh, we can't run no city." Can you imagine that? They actually told my young black butt, "Oh, black folks can't run no city." Now, isn't that an interesting statement? Well, tonight we will discuss the gentrification process in both Cambridge and Boston. We're talking about how black folks are being moved off the land, a systematic process by the power structure. And in the House, to discuss these issues at hand, specifically the succession of a particular portion, 12.3 miles or maybe 12.5 miles of Boston, known as Roxbury. Roxbury wanting to succeed from Boston and become an entity unto itself. One of the major proponents of this particular school of thought, a developer, president of V&M, and he wanted to have the city be unto itself. Who am I talking about? None other than Alphonse Morad. I want to welcome to RealBlackTalk.com. Al, welcome.
Thank you, Brother Ari.
Thank you so much for coming on down to the studio. Now, let's just go ahead and jump into this whole gentrification process dealing with Roxbury. I mean, right now we can see that there's this big RoboCop police station right there on Tremont Street across from Reggie Lewis Track Center. And we can see that all of Mission Main has been demolished and they have new housing development there. Can you give us a little background and history, being the owner of the Mandela Complex over there on Washington Street? Can you give us a little bit of history of how the city of Boston, of the Boston Redevelopment Authority, has dealt with you as a developer, as a real estate owner?
Yes. Let me first give you a background about the Boston redevelopment structure.
Mm-hmm.
They are separate entity from the city and the state. The board consists of four members elected by the mayor.
Selected by the mayor.
Mm-hmm. And they basically in the sense they are a straw, that the mayor controls the board, he has a final signature for the gentrification, and he's the one who basically approve or disapprove any gentrification that takes place in any part of the city. To go back into the 60s, when I came from the Middle East, and we had an Arabic culture in the South End,
mm-hmm.
and we had a mixed community of African-American blacks owners and Hispanics and Chinese and Arabic community, and we had three churches there. We were gentrified in the late 70s when the Boston Redevelopment Authority, I remember, they moved to Warren Street, and they put their headquarters there. And their gimmick was, we have a grant of $3,000 free if you qualify for it, and we want to help you rehab your homes. And these homes in the South End, room and houses and apartment houses, they were like 70, 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They needed boilers. They needed roofs. And so we all were excited about the plan that they were going to help us with.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went over and we applied the application, that gave them an in into these rooming houses, and they brought the housing inspectional services in. They coated all the buildings, and obviously the rehab work was excess of $3,000.
Mm.
So now you have to come up with $20,000 in order to do the total rehab, and now you have violation, and now you're on the court. And we know in the 70s, it came out later on through the federal government research, redlining was very much real in Boston, mm-hmm. working hand-in-hand with the BRA. So the bank will not give us the money toward our homes, although we had equity, and we had some of these buildings, no mortgages at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because gender was to move us out of there and be able to condo the rooming houses into high elitist revenue.
So let me just understand that it was like a bait-and-switch kind of deal.
That's correct.
Oh, we offer you $3,000 to help upgrade your house. They come in, inspect your property, and then say, oh, you're in code violation here, code violation there, and to get your house in good standings, you need to spend $20,000-$25,000 to get your house to be within code.
That's correct. And the banks at that time, they will not give us the finance on the houses, and we didn't have any mortgages. We have plenty of equity. But the banks were redlining, working hand-in-hand with the BRA, because our presence at that time depreciates the neighborhood, because the BRA are an architectural agency.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is to generate the highest revenue for the city.
Mm.
So if I own a room and house and I'm paying $1,000 taxes for the whole building,
mm-hmm.
and if they could come in and condo the same room and house into 5 condominium, now they're getting an average of $10,000 to $20,000 a year on taxes.
Mm.
So the land becomes too expensive for us to occupy. And the BRA agenda, how could they maximize the land to the highest dollar in order to help the city budget and the state?
And so this is what happened to the Arabic community from your perspective in the South End during the early to mid-70s. Now, if we can fast forward, because you have held quite a bit of real estate. You actually own the 5.5-acre building that is now or was known as Mandela. It was originally known
as V&M Management, Westminster Willard by HUD.
Westminster
Willard. Yes.
And you changed it from Westminster Willard to Mandela in
1987.
In 87.
In order to support the incorporation for Roxbury to become separate city from Boston.
Okay. So you wanted Roxbury itself to become an incorporated city, just like there are other incorporated cities that have their own city hall, their own mayor, their own city council, own school committee, just like Cambridge
or Brookline.
You wanted Roxbury to secede from Boston and not be under the stronghold of the BRA or the stronghold of the mayor of Boston.
That's correct. To me, as a developer and a businessman, Roxbury itself is extremely wealthy because they occupy 2.5 acres of land. 12.5 acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they were generating revenue to the city of $360 million a year on taxes out of the single homes, two-family homes, three-family homes.
Just this 12.5 mile area.
Right. And frankly, the city of Boston could not survive financially when they were gentrifying South End and the Back Bay without getting the revenue out of Roxbury, because 60% of Boston are tax exempt. You get your churches, you get your universities, you get your hospitals. So the real 100% income in order to support the city hall at that time was the Roxbury property real estate income. But then, through the years after they finished the gentrification through the West End, the South End, the Back Bay, and now they needed to go further into Lower Roxbury. Lower Roxbury was the gateway to the gentrification to go into Deep Roxbury. And this is where the new annex city to downtown Boston. That's why they moved the government buildings into Lower Roxbury, if you recall, like the registry. Moved into Lower Roxbury.
They wanted to, but all of a sudden the building became sick. Have you ever heard of such a thing? A sick building.
Right.
And now, in this very same sick building, they have a clinic. a black community health center in the former sick building. The building was too sick for the registry, but now it's okay to put in the Whittier Street Health Center.
Right. They also brought in, for $71 million, the Boston Police Headquarters. And when there was a real crime in Roxbury and the youth were dying, and I filed a class action lawsuit with the residents against the mayor and the commissioner of the police, and the St. Clair report agreed that the fact there was mismanagement and at that time, and to basically change the whole structure of the Boston Police Department. The question here, did they bring the police department for Roxbury, or did they bring it in to attract outside developers to say, don't be afraid anymore of crime because we put one of the most sophisticated police stations in the country, and now you could build your four-star hotel next to us because now we are gentrifying Lower Roxbury, and this is where it's going to be the seat of power.
When you say gentrify, can you define for our listeners specifically what that means to you, Mr. Marat?
Gentrify to me is basically taking a valuable land of affordable housing, communities, and the land becomes too expensive to keep Section 8 housing on it and certificates on it and the pool on it. So when there is a demand for the land, for example, to put a high-rise building like the Prudential, the John Hancock, and you could get $10 million assessment for taxes on the land, and you could basically have Saks Fifth Avenue, Lord and Taylor, like the Prudential, and generate another $70 million of sales tax and be able to employ another 300, 400, 500 employees of white collar there, then they no longer need your federal subsidies. They no longer need affordable housing because now they're maximizing the land for the highest dollar that the city could achieve by attracting outside convention center, outside hotels. So this becomes a conventional city of the world, where eventually the potential of Boston is how could we compete on a national level to attract the high-rise buildings and attract the convention center, where the Japanese and the Chinese and everyone else will fly into Boston and have a headquarter and be able to hold their international meetings and their corporations in Boston. Therefore, they can't associate, once you go into this sophistication, back to Section 8 housing, BHA housing, certificates, and low-income housing, because you're going to make a lot more money.
Now, let's go back to the original thought and question dealing with the Mandela housing complex that you owned, and all of a sudden, you no longer own it. Now, you changed the name in 87.
That's correct.
From a white man to a black man. And when that happened in 87, what transpired after that?
Well, the developers around me, they were extremely angry. The city were angry because they were afraid of the sign. When they saw the sign, 7-foot letters, says Mandela, basically that represents a black development, and that depreciates the assets around it.
Wait a minute. Just because you changed the name from a white man's name to a black man's name, it depreciated the value of the property?
That's correct. You're not going to build a 4-star hotel for a conventional national city and invite any investors next to that sign. They're going to walk by it and say goodbye.
Now, we're talking 1987 when Mandela was still incarcerated before he was president.
That's correct. Because I knew what happened to the Arabic communities and others before 87 on the gentrification of the BRA. And I knew I wanted to make a difference in order to save Roxbury to become an independent city. So that sign was the dividing line between Boston and Roxbury, in a sense, looking at the city hall, and I'll say, I dare you if you come any further. You took enough, you have enough revenue, now leave us alone, and we want our own city, our own jobs, our own hotels, and now you come and visit us and spend your dollar in our city, because we're very wealthy. We already have a revenue, over $300 million of real estate taxes. We already have our own land that we control, and we could build our own empowerment. And if Cambridge could do it and Brookline could do it, why can't we? We're already here. We've been here for 30 years. We own the land.
Now, Alphonse, this is realblacktalk.com on the radio. And what would be the motivation of a Lebanese man to help out the black community, Roxbury? What would be the motivation for you to want to see the black community be autonomous and independent of Boston?
Well, because I was born in the Middle East and I'm a visionary, not being born here, I was shocked to see racism in America.
Mm.
Because when you travel abroad, you would feel there is equality in America. There's no racism. We're all equal under First Amendment rights, everything. And I was stunned.
But wait a minute. You're saying you saw racism in Boston? The hallowed, you know, lofty city, the intellectual mecca of the world, one of the first cities in the country? You saw racism here? Oh.
I would say Boston's probably one of the most racist cities, not in America, but in the world. I think before we preach to the world about human rights, I think charity starts at home.
Mm.
And we ought to start in our own backyard and clean our own backyard before we tell the world about human rights.
So we're talking about racism when it comes to real estate and property. And you're talking about there's racist ways and relationships between the Boston Redevelopment Authority and local area banks when it comes to redlining and financing for real estate. And how, once again, I'm coming back to Mandela. I'm not going to leave this issue. I want to get all of that story out. You own this 5.5-acre development, this land, and now you don't.
Because I was a threat to the city and to the state, because what I did, when I put the sign up, I came up also with the idea of the Mandela Town Hall, because America was built in town halls, and eventually they grow to be city hall.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured the community were not ready, and since BRA, they are architectural planners, how to maximize the land value and make money, I said, I have an experience, I'm a developer, and why don't, since I control 5.5 acres of land, why don't I set precedence? In my own developments, I have 1,500 black and Hispanic residents, and why don't I start my own sort of a working empowerment toward the community? And we did. We had the site of Mandela. We had the Mandela Town Hall. And then I had another group, and I started the Mandela Research Center. And I had 12 youth working with me and trying to educate them about how to preserve the Roxbury employment, jobs. And I have written about initiative housing proposal to even President Clinton and Vice President Gore, how to reduce the national budget on housing and how to develop ownership and how to reduce crime by employing the youth out of the same budget is being wasted now into security guards and into vandalism. And so our youth is being neglected in Roxbury, totally. There's no leadership. We're getting the money for them from Washington, but the money goes south. It doesn't go into the community. That's what you're a victim of. You're very wealthy. You're extremely rich. You have it all. The problem is the black leadership. I never understood. When they get several hundred million dollars allocated to Roxbury and it goes south, where's everybody's not screaming, saying, where's my money? So what they're doing, they're building more jails for the youth and putting them away, more demolition, destroying the neighborhood, gentrifying it, at your own expense, at your own money, and at your own ownership. You've been there for 40 years. So how could you be displaced? You're allowing it.
How long did you own Mandela?
We bought Mandela in 1981 from HUD.
You bought it. And after buying it in 81, you went ahead and changed the name in 87. And if I remember correctly, you said developers were upset with you because you embarrassed them by changing the name. And then you became a target.
I didn't embarrass them. They were upset. I depreciated their investment. They said to me, we spent $35 million. Who's going to buy a condo for several hundred thousand dollars next to the sign says Mandela? In fact, Andrew Jones, the co-founder of Mandela, he had a press release when Nelson Mandela visited Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 50 demonstrators marching on the City Hall in order to bring Nelson Mandela on a motorcade front of the building to see the sign. Would you believe they did not? They went around Mandela because they don't want the national media to take a picture of the sign and show in Boston that there is a development with a 7-foot ladder says Mandela, because that will depreciate the assets and therefore outside investors will not think of Boston as going to be the new conventional center. It's racism.
Mm.
And would you believe, honoring the mayor after he becomes the president, they will not take in front of the building named after him? Where 1,500 tenants had a big party and they were on the sidewalk and they refused to motorcade in front of that building. There was a press release on that. So that to show you, the city did not want to advertise the name Mandela on a national level. And they didn't want to advertise it on a local level because that will depreciate the assets and the BRA will have a problem attracting investors next to Mandela.
Let me let you know you are listening to RealBlackTalk.com on the radio. I am Brother R.A. coming to you on WMBR Cambridge, 88.1 FM. And we're talking about gentrification in Roxbury now. Let's finish talking with Alphonse Morad, the former owner of the 5.5-acre development named Mandela, and how they took your property and put it in receivership and caused you to be bankrupt? Is that true?
I am bankrupt. I'm indigent by the court. The one who put me in a trusteeship in front of Judge Carol Kenner in the bankruptcy was the Boston Redevelopment Authority, the City of Boston, and the State Revenue. And frankly, this is no longer to me, I'm so disappointed, capitalism.
Mm.
You might as well say it the way they did. This is worse than being living in Russia under the communism regime.
Hmm.
I mean, this is like the government walks into a judge and says, we want to take over 276 units, 5.5 acres of land, Your Honor, and here we are in front of you. And here the judge will smile and saying, it's yours. What happened to capitalism? Mm. What happened to reorganization? What is the purpose of being in 11 if you cannot reorganize and build a structure and be able to pay all your debts and turn the place into tenant ownership?
And so when when did all of this happen? I mean, when did you go before the courts? Did you appeal? What's the status now? Can you just, give me a synopsis of that particular scenario?
Well, I think right now is basically the trustee was appointed, and Beacon Management, they were invited in by the BRA and the state and the residents, and because of their expertise, a $5 billion corporation, and they were in front of the subcommittee in Washington, D.C., using this as a precedence that they're going to set on a national level of tenant ownership. The question right now, you need to know and investigate, and the community, is the Mandela residents, 1,500 black and Hispanic, are the owners, joint owners with Beacon Management, and they're going to end up ultimately being the owners of the Mandela developments, which they've been allocated $14 million of tax credit. And are they legitimately partnership with the tenants, or do they own it outright and they rehabbing the place at the expense of the tenants by achieving to receive $14 million from the IRS? And this whole thing is a sham. It needs investigation. I'm not going to go into it. I'm hoping your program and other activists will take a look on the website. It's all there, and we'll take a look at the deed and take a look at the confirmation plan in the bankruptcy court and take a look about the IRS approving the money and the state revenue and who today owns Mandela. Do the residents are partners with Beacon, or Beacon owns it outright as a private developers and the tenants is being used as a straw, although they brought in the $14 million and they're supposed to be a joint ownership?
So the courts determined that this development should be owned by the tenants, and they brought in partners of a management company of Beacon to help facilitate this process, but Beacon isn't actually working in the best interest of the tenants. They're basically running the development as if they own it, and the question is, if tenants are owning their units, then they should not be able to be evicted. Is that correct?
That is correct. And there's many tenants being evicted, and they're evicting substantial amount of tenants. And the question on the deed, who owns Mandela today, and are the tenants a joint partner as owners with Beacon, or they don't exist in ownership at all?
Mm.
And if they don't, then the IRS have an obligation, the criminal investigation of the IRS, to investigate the fraudulent tax credit, to pull back the money that they allocated, because that's supposed to go into tenant ownership, and Beacon is not entitled to have tax credit as a private developer.
Hmm.
The money is allocated for the residents, not for Beacon.
And so you're saying there's more information on this particular issue at the website, http://members.aol.com/scandal637/corruption.html.
Yes.
That's a long old address, Jack.
Also, what's interesting here, the trustee who was appointed in 1996, he was appointed as an owner, stepped in my shoes, to be a joint partner with Beacon Management and the Mandela residents in order to obtain tax credit. So therefore, I was ousted out as no longer the owner. Would you believe in 1997, the trustee, he makes a profit of $2,088,000, and in 1999, he makes a profit of $956,000. And now the IRS, after being indigent, kicked out, holding me responsible for $2.5 million of taxes that I did not receive the money. I never seen a penny. I've been kicked out. I lost 15 years investment. And I'm liable right now personally on all these notes that I signed, excess of $5 million. And the IRS, they have an obligation right now to investigate what happened to the money is the tax credit is legal or illegal, and who is responsible to pay the taxes on a $2.5 million that I never received. I want my money. So this is a whole game of sham. We're all being taken here. Alphonse Morales has been taken, the TANF has been taken, and the question, the governmental entities, they cover up how long they're going to keep covering up. That means the BRA, HUD, the state revenue, and it's a question mark regarding the IRS, what they're going to do ultimately regarding the tax credit and who is the legitimate owner. See, to qualify for tax credit, you have to have a 10 years of ownership. And they appointed Stephen Gray in my place as an order 96 for him to apply for tax credit, and the money was allocated to him. So if he stepped on my shoes and he's the owner, and he got $14 million, then after that, in 1998, 99, he makes $2.5 million profit under my company. Why should I be paying taxes when I'm not the owner? So the IRS got to make up their mind. Who is the owner? Is Al Murad the owner in 97? If I am, where's my tax credit? If I am the owner, where's my $2.5 million? It's a sham here. But no one here wants to address this.
So the people, the community, is being taken advantage of from what you're saying, Al, the federal level, the state level, and the city level.
That's correct. And the IRS. Because the IRS allocated the $14 million approved toward tax credit, toward affordability, to tenant ownership. Now, if that is fraud, that's serious. You now, can't fraud the IRS on tax credit. It's got to be legitimate. That's a lot of money.
Now, we've been talking about Mandela. What about, what's your knowledge and history behind Mission Maine in that particular development?
Well, Mission Maine, basically, had allocated $50 million as a gift for about 820 units. And I came up with a proposal on Mission Maine. For $50 million, why don't we rehab Mission Hill totally and deed all these units to the residents for $1 and let them become owners and let them have equity. And this way here, they could also borrow money in the future against their equity and start their own businesses. And that would reduce the national deficit on housing. And we no longer have to support the Section 8 subsidies. And we no longer have to support Mission Hill. And we don't have to worry about displacement of Mission Hill. Because Mission Hill have a gift of a lifetime. How could you get a gift for $50 million and then the Longwood Medical Center that was an icon of Boston Globe, one of the officials, they said they will not expand their facility until Mission Hill is flattened down. So that means basically they don't want Mission Hill to exist. So did the federal funds from HUD came to save affordable housing, the $50 million gift, or did it come really to demolish Mission Hill to help the Longwood Medical Center and help the gentrification?
And so when you talk about the Longwood Medical Center, I mean, if we just look at the geography of the land, we're talking about right behind that big new Schroeder Plaza police station with that big old ugly antenna that disrupts reception anywhere in the vicinity, the big RoboCop police station right there. Out the back side of it is, it's still Roxbury. I mean, you have the Museum of Fine Arts down at one end. You have the Mass College of Art there. And beyond that, you have the Longwood Medical Area. And what I'm noticing now is that the art school is utilizing Roxbury College's parking area, and they're using shuttle buses to transport nervous, scared white folks from their cars parked over there back over to the Longwood Center. And so, as I see it, the Boston Redevelopment Authority, and you referenced this earlier, Alphonse, that the planning for this has been done well in advance, and little individuals like you with 5 acres of land and whatever your particular agenda may be is not going to stop what they've been planning for 40 or 50 years.
That is correct. I think Mandela have slowed them down for about 7-8 years. This would have taken place much earlier. But because of the movement and the displacement, the renaming the place, and there was many demonstrations in the city hall, and there was many backroom deals done by the city, and there was many lawsuits of extortions and perjuries. So therefore, the city were very careful, and the state taking their time to remove Al Murad. It took them actually 10 years to remove me out of there. The cost, I was told legally, between all the agency, I spent $2 million myself alone fighting the displacement and for them to remove me out of ownership. You look at a $20 million cost. So therefore, bottom line, they have won. Lower Roxbury, it's gone. You can forget about it. Now the question, could you save the rest of Roxbury? They have taken over Lower Roxbury.
They've taken over Lower Roxbury, and they're well up into Fort Hill area now, Jack. Fort Hill area, moving on up into where the Orange Line used to run overhead on Washington Street, and moving towards the Jewish Memorial Hospital and on down to Eggleston. And so we're really... Black folks cannot be scared of revolution. Revolution just means change. And if we want to have part in this change, we need to start buying our property, or we need to start collaborating, working together, and start talking about these particular issues. Alphonse Murad, you're talking about developers working with tenants so that they can own their own units, not necessarily developers, because they're capitalists. They're all about the money. So then it should be, you mean the government? State, city, local government should be helping tenants own their particular units and property? Is that what you're saying?
They should, but not in this case. And the secret partners here with the money, who is behind the gentrification, is HUD. No one has focused on HUD, because under the Clinton administration, Boston received 20% of the national budget for affordable housing because of the Democratic Party here and their alliance with the Clinton administration. And the question, you have to take a look, close to $500 million, how much of that money went into affordability and how much of it went into the gentrification. See, the problem is, I don't understand why the black leadership are not doing their homework and protecting that the government, the HUD money that is coming into the community, to make sure that money is well spent into affordability and not for displacement. So there is black educators who's familiar with the game, and they know the game very well. And my question is, why they're silent and they're not making the comments to the community? The grassroots is willing. They're looking for leadership. I lived with the grassroots 15 years. They're beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
They're innocent. They're looking for guidance. They're saying, show me how. I'll walk behind you. Show me the way. They want leadership. The question you have to ask them, Boston, if Roxbury gentrified 10 years from now totally, where were the black leadership? They allowed it. They watch it. They witness it. That's where the problem is. I can understand the grassroots not being familiarized with all the sophistication of the blueprint of the BRA, maximizing land value for the highest dollar, gentrifying for high-rise building, bringing in money from Washington goes south, doesn't go to them, lack of police protection, lack of entrepreneurs. That's why in Roxbury, the city intentionally, deliberately, left 12 vacant lots. If you go and you take a tour, they've been vacant for 20 years because they already knew they don't want the black communities to build any businesses on them because they were going to gentrify Roxbury. So all this homework is not really new to anyone who's listening from the black educators on Boston and the black politicians and the leadership.
So you really do believe there are black folks out there that are in the know and they allowed this to happen? Because I would just think, oh, Well, I think the white man is going to do right by us, so we're just going to let him go ahead and do what he needs to do, because the white man is good to us. That's what some black leadership might be saying, you know, Al.
Well, I spent 15 years with all my programs and all my hard work,
mm-hmm.
and at the confirmation plan, clearly, Beacon was invited in to take over Mandela by the black leadership.
Mm.
They brought in Beacon. They had a choice to decide, do we want to keep Al Morad as an owner, or do we want Morad out, we want Beacon in.
And this is the black leadership.
That's correct. So to me, if I have to make a comment in the future, I won't be around Boston 10 years from now, I'll say the one who genocided Roxbury is the black leadership. Because I already know what the BRA agenda is. I mean, they're business people.
Mm-hmm.
They're an architectural agency to genocide, to maximize land for the highest dollar, and to build high-rise business. That's no secret.
So wait a minute. Are you saying that it's possible that there's some black leaders that have gotten paid to get you bounced and bring in Beacon?
I'm not making any comment on that. I'm going to leave that to the audience. That's for you to figure out. There is a point where I mind my own business, and I'll say you had a choice to choose Al Morad of his 15 years track record to keep him in Mandela with the residents and turn the key to the residents for ownership, which I have been basically active behind. And if Beacon genocides the area, as far as I'm concerned, good luck to Beacon. They're business people, they're developers, they're out to make money, and they were invited in as the Trojan horse was in the Helen Troy movie.
Alphonse Morad, let me ask you, what does the future hold for you? What are you doing? I mean, being bankrupt, indigent, financially, what's up? How does a brother survive, a Lebanese brother survive?
Well, I have two cases pending right now. One is I won an appeal by the appeal court regarding that $2.5 million was taken by the trustee, and I'm responsible to pay the IRS the taxes on it, which I'm indigent. I never received the money. And the other issue is the negligence on the trustee. And the third issue is the tax credit was issued in 1997. Is that belong to the owner who has to have 10 years period, Al Morad? Could Stephen Gray step on my shoes and become the owner?
Alphonse Morad, brother, trying to survive, keep his head above water here in racist Boston. Let me let you know you are listening to RealBlackTalk.com on the radio. I am Brother R.A. coming to you on WMBR, Cambridge, 88.1 FM.